From National Public Radio, this is Horizons. I'm Verda Mae Grosvenor.
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
That nasty, wicked witch from the West in The Wizard of Oz conjures up all the negative images we have of witches. A witch is an ugly hag with a broomstick, dancing around a bubbling cauldron full of bats' wings and other gross things, right? Well, not quite. There are many who think that image is very negative and unfair. They feel witches are misunderstood. On this edition of Horizons, Contemporary Witchcraft, producer Adam Phillips takes a look at the witch, her craft, and the hundreds of American women for whom witches are positive role models.
Going so soon? I wouldn't hear of it. Why, my little party's just beginning.
When you hear the word witch, the image that comes to mind probably isn't all that different from what 10-year-old Jessica Elsis Patrick pictures when she first hears the word.
Witches have big top hats, a long pointy nose with about 10 warts, I'd say, long black dress, maybe with patches on, and they usually have black cats, and they're very mean.
Not a very flattering stereotype. No wonder most of us are happy to believe that witches only lived once upon a time in some far, far away place, halfway between Salem and Oz. It turns out, however, that Kansas may be closer to the true address, and that what the witch has to offer might even be valued by women in the real world. Listen to what happened to Rebecca Keppen, an all-American mother of three.
When my third child was born, I had some old friends come and visit, and I was sitting at the kitchen table nursing the baby, and I absentmindedly picked up the book that my friend was reading. I just opened it to any page and started to read it. And lo and behold, there on those pages was written the closest thing I had ever come across to my own personal philosophy of life. It was just shocking that on those pages somebody else could have written down what I felt to be my own inner belief about life. Come to find out, it was a book about witchcraft.
In broad strokes, witchcraft is a religion that uses earth imagery and the invisible powers of nature to heighten awareness and promote healing. To a witch, all the earth is alive, and the sacred is available in the present moment. Thus they would agree with the late and much lamented mythologist, Joseph Campbell.
Right here now, there's a constant pouring of the energy of the divine into the world and into you. Find it!
Witches worship the goddess, and throughout the year, they celebrate her by observing the relationship between changes in the earth's seasons, the phases of the moon, and the cycles of animal and plant life. This forms their living mythology, at least according to Joseph Campbell's definition.
Mythologies are personifications of those powers of nature or of social laws which operate in your life, and they become guides and models for behavior. How do you read the contemporary culture in terms of your psychological well-being and in terms of its relationship to the world of nature?
Caroline Casey is Washington correspondent for the Metaphysical News Service and a practicing witch. She says that witchcraft is all about the connections Campbell is describing.
Understand the underlying relatedness of all things. People are related to their families, to the land, to plants, to animals, to planets, to the cosmos. Witchcraft is the language of these relationships. It is the basic concept that the cosmos and everything in it is conscious and living, and that the more we cooperate with it and cultivate an attitude of cooperation, the better things work. A witchcraft is a way of operating in the world in which you have outer symbols to remind you of inner contracts, the hidden relationships, how things are correlated.
I ask for an example.
We have this energy which we'll call Aries and Mars and springtime and things red and red berries and stimulants and cinnamon. So if you want to make something happen, then you announce this very strongly to your subconscious by wearing red. Each time when you wear it during the day, you'd notice that that was the outer symbolic ornamentation of an inner devotion to something that you wanted to bring about.
In England, the country woman who had mastered these hidden relationships and could put them to solid practical use was called crone or hag, words which had very different connotations in olden times.
Our word for hag comes from the Greek hagios, which is the holy one, revered one, the sacred one.
Winifred Milius LaBelle is an artist and an illustrator of children's books. She has spent the last 10 of her 75 years researching archaeology and the role of women in pre-literate cultures. She explains her interest over afternoon tea.
I'm excited about recovering this history of women, and this is leading me more into the understanding of what witchcraft was and to the image of the crone, the old woman. The crone is the woman who survived, and it was she who conducted the rites. They were the wise women. They were the repository of wisdom, of what berries you eat and what ones you don't eat, which mushrooms are good and which are not. And the woman who had all of the skills of midwifery, a very important woman, and not to be in any way ridiculed. And the same with witch. The witch was not this pejorative, ridiculous old creature flying around. She was revered.
You know, the crone is the grandmother, the woman of experience. She's the queen of witches. Us, anytime we are coming from our experience.
Gina Banghart is a handsome red-haired witch living among the eucalyptus and the redwood trees of Northern California. She explains that witches recognize three phases of womanness: the carefree young maiden, the nurturing fertile mother, and the wise old crone, and that these stages correspond to the waxing, full, and waning moon, another witchy symbol of female power. I asked Gina to tell me about her grandmother.
My grandmother emigrated from Ireland. Her name was Ethel McGarry. She was small and plump, and she had really incredible blue eyes, and I was kind of intimidated by her. She was a very powerful woman.
It is part of the crone's ancient task to share her wisdom with the young maiden who will someday be the old crone herself. And this time-honored relation still happens between wise old grandmothers and their granddaughters everywhere. Gina loved to hear the nuggets of Irish magic and lore in her grandmother's voice.
She was basically an Irish witch. You know, here's this Irish witch who's also Catholic. Well, she taught me that the Mother Mary lived in the moon. She taught me moon magic when I was very little, you know, 5 years old. She taught me about fairies, and she taught me about this money spell where, you know, you would take your silver out and hold it under the new moon, and as the moon grows, your money would grow. She loved me.
Magic and witches just go together. But what is magic exactly? In a sense, the magic that witches know is just a deepening awareness of the unseen powers which kids are just naturally aware of, but cannot control. Powers that most adults could control, but have somehow forgotten about or dismissed. Jessica Elsis Patrick.
I think that's sort of magic, the way everything forms and how beautiful it is. Like in the woods, it's right on the beach. I mean, a beautiful place. That's sort of magic that, you know, can really happen. And everybody knows that it can happen, but doesn't really notice it because, this is just a mountain. And, this is just an ocean. And I think kids understand it much more than grown-ups understand magic. They've had all that school, and they just messed up their imagination. I actually think how a plane goes into the air is magic. It's pretty amazing. That's what I think magic is also.
We may not have everything that the ancients had, but we have access to all the same sources. Magic is the fringe benefit.
Judy Harrow is a witch living in the heart of New York City and the leader of a coven, a group of witches. She holds with a sort of existential magic that comes from the mind and mingles with the magic of the world outside. The witch learns to do this for intelligence and pleasure and healing.
Magic has been defined as the art of changing consciousness in accordance with will. What does that mean? I think what it means is that our consciousness is how we understand the world around us. We're bombarded with so many sensory impressions as we go about our day. We have to focus somewhere. And it matters a lot where we choose to focus. So learning how to take conscious control of how you model your world gives one a great deal more power with one's own life.
Judy says that this sort of magic can be practiced just as effectively in Times Square as it can on a mountaintop in the Himalayas.
The Earth Mother, the goddess, her cycles and her seasons and the life of her body, the Earth, happen right in the streets, all over the place. Now that I have learned to focus in on it, I see all around me. The magic does change something in the world indeed, and that's my consciousness.
Jessica likens the art of practicing magic to something we already know about.
It sort of has to do with science. It has to do with science because it's changing things and bending things and shaping them together, and sometimes it's making things better and sometimes it's making things worse.
For her, this power holds a certain fear and fascination, but it is obviously desirable.
I would love to know the secret that witches have to cast spells, and not bad spells, but good spells, powerful magic.
I ask her just how she thinks magic is done.
If you wish for something or dream for something real hard, then magic might help make it true. Dreaming, wishing, witches, 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 witches,
That's the secret of everything, believing. I have such a strong belief in the unseen world and the care and the love that we don't know about that is shown us. I never feel anything's a coincidence. I feel it's planned. We can see it in the things that happen to us.
Rola Nordic is a 90-year-old witch who was casually exposed to the craft by her 90-year-old great-grandmother in a small stone cottage in the south of England before World War I. This great-grandmother was born about 1818 and was well known for her psychic powers and her wisdom, the spirit of which she gave with great love to Rola.
Ask believing. If you believe, then you can attract to you what you want. But if you're going to ask, always give thanks for a blessing that you've received, and then ask for what you want. But ask for what you want and not for the means of getting it. Say you wanted to go a trip. Well, you don't ask for the money to go a trip. You ask for the trip.
Rola shares a time-honored witch's method of asking the powers that be.
Visualization is the most important thing. But there are certain steps to build up visualization. First of all, you have to be very certain what it is you want. Be very definite about that. And then you put all the colors into it that you can think of. And then all the sounds that you can think of. And then all the movement that you can think of. And then finally, you make the whole thing solid and you see it so clearly and your consciousness is so raised that you're so sure you're going to get it, that nothing will shake you, well, then you stand a very good chance of getting it.
I ask Rola what it is that she likes to ask for.
Every day, I ask to be guided into right action. And I feel that covers everything. But I often end it and say, and dissolve disagreeable things away from me.
According to their own legends, the witches' power to curse darkness and evil have entered history more than once. For example, it is alleged by them that the witches of England conjured the strange and unnatural storm that prevented the Spanish Armada from landing in England and bringing the Inquisition with them. And according to Roland Nordic, witches' magic played a role in the Blitz of London during the Second World War as well.
I was part of a group of 200 witches who met together every Tuesday evening in a very lovely church on Sloane Street in London. And we had one leader, and we called him Father Nicholson. He was really a high priest. And he would suggest to us color rays that we had to send to different parts of the country and different parts of the world where fighting was very serious. But the most important thing to us was to protect our coastline. We worked very specially on that.
Madame Nordic experienced the horrors of the war nonetheless, a memory she associates with the face of Hitler particularly.
We saw plenty of pictures of him, and he did try to burn London. Those incendiary bombs had a flame of fire a yard behind them, and they would come down anywhere. It was just to burn us and kill us all. But you see, he didn't get away with it. Yes, I wonder what he's going through on the other side of life. He's got to pay for all that.
Merry am I, morning sun, Jesu, assist am I, seeking Osiris.
You get what you pay for, and you pay for what you get. This is the law of karma, and a glib restatement of one of the three inalienable laws that most modern witches recognize, whatever their tradition. Ariana, a high priestess and songwriter, tells me what these three laws are.
There are three laws that are basic to the craft. The first is the threefold law of what you do returns to you threefold. And that means that if you give out love, it'll return to you threefold. If you give out hate, it'll return to you threefold. The second is that annet harm none, do what thou wilt. Or in English, if you don't hurt anybody, including yourself, do what you will. And the third is love, cherishing that which is around you, understanding that all nature and all life is sacred. It's really enjoyment because we're a family.
I ask Ariana how she entered onto this strange path.
The first thing that actually got me into craft was Drawing Down the Moon by Margot Adler. My friend loaned it to me, and I read the book about a women's ritual, and I just said, this is me, this is it. It was incredible. It was women feeding each other and this wonderful incense and calling on different aspects of the goddess to help them. And it's just this beautiful, simple ritual that seemed to me to be the perfect thing to express spirituality.
It is said that witches are not converted. They just find a name for what they were all along. And Z. Budapest, a sort of Hungarian grand dame of goddess spirituality and witchcraft, seems to agree.
The woman is drawn in because it's a familiar, something that we used to know. And where is that memory where we used to know? It's in our genes. It's in our female psyche. This is our archetype. The archetype that opened us up and allowed us to use our own powers in our own behalf, blessing our fields, blessing our kids, cursing with power to protect ourselves, and being goddesses. Not superwoman, but natural woman. I want to teach women how to celebrate, because what we celebrate becomes important, and what we don't celebrate gets devalued.
One way that witches bless their kids is to celebrate their major life changes, like puberty, and to mark these passages with meaningful community rituals. And these are activities which also mark a change in the parents' role.
How many women here had some sort of positive ritual when you first began to menstruate? Had the experience of having the community acknowledge in us and say, hey, this is a wonderful change. You're becoming a woman, you're growing up. This is very, very important.
Starhawk is a much-loved figure in the witchcraft revival and the author of one of its most important texts, The Spiral Dance. Starhawk tells a large Washington, D.C. gathering about a ritual her coven created down at the ocean for a newly menstruating girl and her mother.
We tied them together with a silver cord and we had them run together. And they ran as far as the mother could run. And when she couldn't run any further, we cut them apart and we let the daughter run on alone. And then we brought them back to a hot tub which is our California tradition. And we spent the afternoon telling her stories of how we each became a woman, and we gave her a dress we had embroidered with symbols on. We felt it was a very sacred woman's thing. But we also wanted her to have the experience of having this change acknowledged by men. So we had asked the men in her family and our community to prepare a feast, and they had made a wonderful potluck of red foods. So afterwards we went in and we all ate deviled eggs and apple pie and various other things and hung out, which is also a very important part of rituals. Yeah. Socializing, feeding, eating, having a good time.
This kind of shared value and affirmation make for deep and satisfying friendships between members of a coven, whatever their age. Z Budapest.
It's just really women taking care of each other and building a strength for the community, because when the women in the community are united, you have a community. It's a family in addition to your family, and it's not shrinking. Therapy group tries to do what covens do. In therapy, you take care of each other's feelings, but can you bless each other and send messages to each other without the telephone? Lots of fun doing that stuff, you know? You learn all these other things your brain can do.
I asked Z to tell me about what happens at a typical witchcraft ritual on a mountaintop.
What we do is, as a community, we get together and we pray in a pre-Christian way. Create the sacred circle, set it apart from the mundane by evoking the corners of the universe and evoking our ancestors into it by calling on their names. And then last thing is evoking the goddess. And then we pray for our individual lives, whatever issues we have. Every woman has something every time we meet to pray for. You know, like Mary had a baby, we have to bless the baby. Deborah wants to have a baby, we bless her for fertility. Someone else, his mother is in the hospital, we pray for the mother. And then we bless each other, we sing songs, and when it's all done, we dance around the altar about 3 times to seal it as a spell. Then we thank the spirits very humbly, just like we evoke them, and sit down and party, eating, and sharing drinks. Even the eating is very ritualistic. We feed each other first before we eat ourselves, saying, may you never hunger, may you never thirst. And it's kind of a commitment in this community that we look after each other, we don't let each other fall down. If somebody doesn't have enough to eat, spiritually or physically, that one of us be there to feed her.
Not all circles have a high priestess like Z, or even a formal ritual structure.
Watching the moon rise, that seemed to in itself make the circle.
Diana Jordan lives on Cape Cod. For her and the other women in her moon circle group, just being together once a month under the full moon was enough to get the spirit moving.
We'd sit on the dunes maybe and wait for the moon to come up, and then as the moon would rise, the energy would rise and the spirit would come together, and then maybe we'd make a circle or chant, watching the moon rise. It was just really neat. You know, once you let go of a lot of the mind, a little more of the rational, bit by bit, month by month, the emotions become very intense. Women are willing to go to incredibly deep frontiers. It's like giving birth. The thing is that you always have the sisters to talk to about it, you know. So it's a very supported space.
For the witch, everything is simply what it is, but also invites you to take a step deeper into its mystery. Diana talks about some of the secrets of the new moon, the witching hour of the lunar cycle, when all is dark.
The moon, the darkness, the cold, the winter. That's the time to, I believe, when the seed is planted, the energy in the seed is planted. And so it's a powerful time. It's the time when you go into the deepest darkness within yourself that you plant the seed for growth, that moment of turn, at the turning of the moon, when the darkness is the darkest. That's a very powerful moment. It's almost like the old crone gives you a wish, you know, and you can make a wish, but you have to be careful what you wish.
This brings us to Halloween. Halloween, or All Hallows, is the witch's new year, a time in nature's sacred wheel when the harvest is done and winter is well on its way. Witches say that this is the time also when life and death touch and commingle, that the veil between the worlds is at its thinnest now. So if you like, take a moment to sit back, close your eyes, and try this short Halloween meditation led by Judy Harrow.
You're in a warm and cozy place, but outside your window it's cold. And there's a gusty wind and ragged clouds that come and go across the face of the moon. And it seems that the clouds have forms, and some of those forms are faces. And as you look at them, some of them are the faces of people you've been missing. People who have died. Elders that have passed away. And they're here because they love you. And they're here because they have wisdom to share with you. And on this night, at the turning of the year, they can come back to visit you. It's easy for them to come and see you. They come because they love you, care for you, watch over you, and protect you. And on this special night, they can share with you some of the wisdom that comes from the perspective that they have now. And as you watch their faces, their loving faces and beloved faces, you can hear in the ear, inside your mind, the messages that they have come to bring.
Contemporary Witchcraft was produced and narrated by Adam Phillips. The engineers were Mark Busek, Dennis Nielsen, and Nancy Hammond. Senior producer for the Horizon series is Donna Limerick. Production assistant is Eugene Holly. Executive producer, Benjamin Davis. I'm Verda Mae Grosvenor. Funds for Horizons are provided by NPR member stations. This is NPR, National Public Radio.